Big Adventures with Brian Durker is supported by Cloud Chaser Creative and Humphrey Summit Ski. Humphrey Summit Ski has been supplying Flagstaff and the surrounding area with quality ski and snowboard equipment for the last 40 years. Humphrey Summit Ski offers quality service, repairs, boot fitting, and more, all from the friendliest staff in Arizona, on the corner of Beaver and Elm, and in Grand Canyon Spirits on Humphrey Street in Flagstaff.
Welcome, everybody. It's Big Adventures. I'm Brian Durker. I've been a boatman in Grand Canyon for the last 50 years. And along the way, I have met the most remarkable personalities, storytellers, and liars that you could meet in any single place on this planet. And I want to take advantage of that and bring some of these people to you and talk about their adventures and talk about their dedication to our greatest national treasure, the Grand Canyon. It'll include the private sector, a lot of the commercial history and commercial sector of Grand Canyon. And I also want to get in the administrative elements with the Park Service and some of the other agencies, as well as the scientific stuff that's been going on in Grand Canyon. And I think you'll find each and every one of my guests has a lot to say. And I really am glad that you're going to sit in on this and get a load of this crowd. So years ago, I started with Grand Canyon Youth Expeditions, and I started at a young age, did my first trip, the very first Grand Canyon Youth Expeditions with Dick McCallum. Well, the next year when I started pulling an oar, we were running triple rigs. I was like 15 years old, and my mentor, who we are about to get introduced to, Don Neff, was the lead oar on a triple rig. Two of us on these Army Surplus 10-mans that were three of them strapped side by side. It's called a triple rig. And we do two-week trips with 13, 14 passengers and the two boatmen. And so at a young, impressionable age, I learned a lot of stuff about river running from my dear friend and colleague and mentor, Don Neff. So, Don, there's a couple stories I just want to jump right into, but let's go back to the start of our experience together, and then we're going to segue back further into your early childhood and stuff.
Okay.
But when I first met you, Dick McCallum was starting Grand Canyon Youth Expeditions, and here he takes you and gets you to run a triple rig trip, which are kind of our first commercial trips for that company.
It was
started out as a nonprofit thing and stuff, but I had just done his first Grand Canyon Youth trip as a company with him the previous year. And so here you come over from GCE.
Yes.
And to support McCallum with his change of venue. And there's probably an interesting story you have for us about Grand Canyon Expeditions, the transition to Grand Canyon Youth for Dick McCallum and all that.
I met Dick through Grand Canyon Expeditions, and he told me his background was he ran with Georgie White, and then he hooked up with Ron. How they hooked up, I don't remember. But anyway, we started there, and we had a great time together.
Well, you know, I can only imagine you come to work for Dick. You have left GCE. And Dick gives you a 15-year-old for the rear oar of a triple rig. I mean, come on. You still like Dick?
Well, the 15-year-old he gave me wasn't – he was a 6'4" kid that was very athletic. And as soon as I slapped him around a little bit, he was real good.
What
was his name?
His name was Brian Durker. Okay. And you taught that kid – I feel like Bob Dole or something talking to the third person. But he taught that kid everything he needed to know, and I'll always be indebted to you for that. But I just wanted to start that, and then we'll go into more of our escapades with the youth expeditions, but let's talk about Mexican Hat and your childhood and what got you rolling with the hard hull boats there, Mexican Hat expeditions. Give us a little.
Well, I'll go back even a little further. I grew up in Kansas, and my dad had a successful business in Kansas. And then in 1953, there was a huge, huge flood called the Neosho Flood. You can look it up on the internet. And it was a 17-inch rainfall over 4 days, and it hurt all the farmers there, set them back for 3 years. We hung on for two more years until 55. Then we moved to Lamar, Colorado. We went broke there, but the uranium boom was going strong, and he agreed to go out to Utah, Mexican Hat, Utah, and capitalize on the miners and the uranium boom out there. And so we went. 1957, we arrived in Mexican Hat. And by the way, that was the largest roadless area in the United States of America at the time. The pavement ended at Monticello, Utah, and it didn't pick up until the highway below Tuba City to Flagstaff. So anyway, that's how I ended up there.
That is interesting.
And we ran an Indian trading post there and a cafe and everything. And those were good years for me. I was I was 14 years old, and I had to go all the way to Blanding, 52 miles to high school. So that was my start in Mexican Hat. And now you want to know about Mexican Hat expeditions. Well, I was working at our service station we had there, and Gaylord Stavely came by, and I filled him up with gas, and he said, would you like to go on a river trip? I need some helpers, and would you like to be a helper? And I said, of course, yes, you know. I had run from, I did a solo trip from, in the summer of 57, from Bluff to Mexican Hat on the river, and I loved it. And so I in 1958, my first trip was down Glen Canyon from Height to Crossing of the Fathers.
And so you did, you were doing like San Juan trips and Glen Canyon trips at first.
Yes.
And your clientele was Boy Scouts mostly? Or
No Boy Scouts.
Just like individual clients?
Yeah, we had people from all over, Chicago, Bowman, North Dakota, everywhere. I remember those names because I had to write their names in the book at Rainbow Bridge, so I remember their names. But
you've got a pretty good memory for an old fella.
Well, I work at it. You know, I take.
I should start doing more of that myself. Now that you mentioned it.
But no, and our trips were not cheap. We charged like $300 to $400 a person just to run Glen Canyon. And even more if it was a longer trip. And by the way, in those days, it was about a 9 or 10 day trip to go from Height down to Crossing of the Fathers. And I was rowing all the way. I had no motor until 1959 and 60. We finally put a motor on one of those old boats. They were wooden boats, Brian. You know that.
Yeah, right? The beautiful cataract style boats. Now, for the listener as well, Glen Canyon, a remarkable, a magical place, and we'll get Don to tell us about that. But
wow, it's beautiful.
It is the canyon that was submerged by Glen Canyon Dam's arrival. So this dam comes in and covers up this place. And Don, it was like Indian ruins and waterfalls and water.
It was amazing. And there were no rapids, so it was really friendly, you know. There were a lot of Boy Scouts from Utah and people that, in the last days of the dam, before the dam filled up, ran Glen Canyon. Anybody could run it. No rapids except Track Eye, Tickaboo 1 and 2, and Bullfrog, you know. And you talk about ruins and rock art. Oh, my God, the panels were just amazing. And some of the ruins were like Lake Canyon. The roof was still on the ruins. There were actually pots sitting on a on some shelves in some of these ruins, and we didn't touch them.
It must have been remarkable, just the water, the fresh springs. And
oh, man, are you kidding? Dead Man Spring was one on the San Juan Arm, Redbud Canyon. The the water was so fresh that there were helgramites in the water in the springs. And I know I mentioned that because a helgramite loves fresh, good water. And if you saw a helgramite in a spring, then you knew it was really good water. It's so sweet, so good. We didn't even carry a lot of water, Brian. We carried maybe 5 gallons in an old GI can, and because we could get water anywhere. And there were waterfalls and springs. It was, you know, Lake Canyon, Driftwood Canyon, Moki Canyon, Cathedral Canyon. I mean, I could go on and on forever. But, yeah, as you told me a long time ago when you used to mention Glen Canyon to me, it used to bring tears to my eyes.
Oh, yeah. Ken and Georgie and everybody, I kind of came into it, 6, 7, 8 years after the dam was in place. And it was a fresh, stinging wound to all you guys that were lucky enough to have been up in there and run it.
I want to mention, too, the guys I met on Glen. You would go 8 to 10 days not see anybody. However, when you saw somebody, you got together and, you know, and I saw Georgie White every summer. I saw Ken Slight every summer. I saw the old Sakatwa Ward people from Salt Lake City and rubber boats, you know, and Harry Alison. Harry Alison was a great guy. And those guys were pioneers. I idolized them.
So when was the last time before the dam that you were able to run it? Was it in the late?
The last time I ran.
Before they started.
I ran as a boatman in Glen from 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, and 63 was the last year, I believe. 62 or 63 was the last year. And then they closed off the diversion tunnels and the lake started rising pretty fast too.
Yeah. Yeah, it started rising. I heard that from other people, the shocking elements of when everybody had kind of given up and it was going to cover up with water.
Yeah.
That's a sad thing to lose, something like that.
It's a sad canyon to lose because you'll never get it back. And I know there's a conversation about people wanting to dismantle Glen Canyon Dam, but what you're going to have is a giant mud puddle is what you're going to have.
Yeah, it would be.
It'd take 150, 200 years to clean that out.
Like somebody said, it would be like digging up an old dead body. And that's what you got. It's not going to be the same person. And then you started into the Grand Canyon. Like how many trips did you guys do down there and when you were with Mexican Hat?
I ran a half a trip from Lee's Ferry, or not Lee's Ferry, I'm sorry, from Phantom Ranch. I did the second half from Phantom Ranch down in 1960, and I hiked down Bright Angel Trail. And ironically there, we stayed overnight at Phantom Ranch. The next day we were going to get up and pack, get ready to go, and here comes Doc Marston and John Hamilton and all those guys in the 5 jet boats.
That's right.
So we met the jet boats there, and I got to ride in Wee Red, the jet boat. They gave us a ride down through Bright Angel Creek and back up upriver for a while. And so I'm privileged to have said that in 1960 I got to ride in the jet up boat run.
Well, I would say that's pretty rare opportunity.
Yeah,
I
mean, it was.
No less than that other craft that we've got to get to. Now, one of those boats sank in Grapevine, right?
Yes.
Wee Yellow?
Yeah, Wee Yellow. I believe it was Wee Yellow. I think you're right. They left that day after they gave us a ride, and they said goodbye. Everybody waved and hugged. Everything was dandy, and they left. Well, we hung around there for about an hour and a half, and they came back, minus one boat, you know. And not only the Wee Yellow went down, but that was the boat that was carrying most of the 16-millimeter film that they had. They lost a ton of film on that trip. In fact, they lost the majority of it, Bill Belknap told me later. And Indiana Gearworks was the company that, as I recall, I could be wrong on this, but I think I'm okay on it. Indiana Gearworks sponsored that trip partially, you know. And they lost a ton of stuff in that one boat. They should have taken it out at Bright Angel, but they didn't. And by the and I will say one other thing. They were pretty cocky when they got to Bright Angel. They'd already gone through the Middle Granite Gorge. They'd already gone through lava, you know. And they were riding pretty high until they came back and lost Wee Yellow and Grapevine. And then that was put a damper on everything. Two or three of their boatmen had to hike out because they didn't have room for them, you know. They spent that night, and then they left the next day, and they finished the trip, you know. But it was fun to ride those jet
amazing rides. Historic time you got in on that.
I was just at the right place at the right time.
And then how many more of those type trips did you do after that with the Mexican hat?
I was a full boatman the whole trip in 1961, 62, and 63. In 1964, Natalie and I got married, and so I had a different agenda in 64. And that's when I went to Salt Lake. Natalie and I moved to Salt Lake, and then I was driving down Highland Drive, and I saw these boats out there, and it was Ron Smith working on boats in Highland Drive in Salt Lake. And he was just starting, and he and Dick was there, and they were just starting Grand Canyon Expeditions. And so I pulled over and I went up and said, "What are you guys doing?" We talked a bit and they said, "Have you run Grand?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, and then they wanted to hire me, you know, hire me in a quote unquote way, you know.
Right. You work but not pay you too much? Yeah, that sort of way.
Things were a little loose in those days, yeah, to say absolutely. The least. Yeah. And money wasn't a deal with us anyway.
It wasn't the driving force, was it?
Nobody ran river for money. They ran it for love.
It was a beautiful time.
That was it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, long story short, McCallum kind of helps get GCE going. You're working with GCE. Then Ron and Dick split apart, kind of.
Yeah.
And then you came over, and there you and I are doing triple rigs together.
Yeah, yeah.
But while you were with GCE, and I've really been looking forward to asking you about this, Don, you were doing triple rigs for GCE.
That's correct.
And give us some of that. And as legend has it.
Yeah, as legend has it.
Don Neff was the first one to run Crystal Rapids.
That's right. That's right.
But go into those triple rig trips and the,
in 1960,
the glory of Crystal.
In 1964, as I said, I moved to Salt Lake, met Ron and Dick McCallum, and eventually Bill Belknap was with us too. And Ron Smith and Dick McCallum both ran a trip as a passenger for Georgie White. And so Ron was starting the business, and they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know what boat to run or to put tubes on it or not. They didn't even know what the hell they were doing. Nobody did, except Georgie, I think. And so Georgie ran a triple rigs. The fireman from Los Angeles used to run those triple rig trips for her. And so Ron says, "Okay, we'll run a big boat and a triple rig." He didn't have anybody run a triple rig. Nobody ran them, you know. But I was pretty young and cocky then, so I said, "Yeah, I can do that," you know. So we put three 10 mans together, as you know, just like you and I did. And I ran, I ran every year. I ran one or two triple rig trips through 66, through definitely through 68, 69.
Yeah, right in there to the early 70s. Yeah.
And I had some interesting back boatmen, totally inexperienced and terrified. And I was terrified too. Yeah, I mean, if you show me a man that's not scared in Grand Canyon with no backup and that old equipment, then I'll show you a guy that's either insane or a liar, one of the two.
I'd agree with you. And you know, for the guests here, the people listening, a triple rig is an unusual boat. It's a sweep rig in that there's only two boatmen. There's three rafts slung together. And you've got, we'd usually have 13 or 14 passengers. So this is a really full, small boat full of people. It would be a two-week trip. And so it was very intimate trip and very light on food. and anything else. There was no beer on the trip. There was no pop. It was very Spartan. But it was the spirit of the expedition. It was a whole different type of person.
And we had to get up early in the morning, as you recall.
We were cooking on fire.
Because when you run a triple rig and you want to make 25 miles a day, you better get your butt in gear because that upstream whim starts about, 2 o'clock or so, or 3 o'clock or so. And you better get your butt in gear because once that wind came up, that triple rig was really affected, wasn't it, Brian?
Oh, my God. We'd turn it downstream and pull.
Brutal.
And then, the eddies, you'd get caught in those eddies. But we had remarkable success, didn't we, Don?
Yeah, we did. We did.
Don, you know, taught me all the innuendos of three-quartering it, going through, like, the hole in crystal or, some major things that we did, I thought were pretty,
We were good. You were amazing. You were the first really, really good back boatman I had. I also ran with Bill Belknap. He was a back boatman for me.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, we ran a triple rig through from Ouray all the way down to Green River, and then we went through Cataract Canyon in it too. But we didn't go through Glen, of course. The river was up by then, the lake, I mean.
Well, and also that would be a really long trip through Glen.
It was horrendous anyway, And
oh, my God.
I mean, but boy, you were in good shape because, you pull on those oars for 8-10 hours a day and you had a workout,
Well, we were in pretty good shape, but we were malnutritioned on those diet that we had. And I love McCallum and the opportunities he provided. But that menu, we were eating Richmore freeze-dried food.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
To where you just put this powder in a bucket and heat it up and stir it up and
powdered
feed it
eggs.
To the people.
The powdered eggs were really good, weren't they?
They were pretty special. But
what color were they? Were they green?
Any color you wanted them to be, pretty much. But there was the one that we just couldn't eat, Chili Mac. Remember the Chili Mac?
Chili Mac. Oh, my God.
Oh, and horrible. It was like a chemical or something. It wasn't like food, and it had the pigment of highway paint.
It came from World War II. I think they got it from the Germans in World War II, and we ate it on the river.
It was a favorite with the people, but I don't ever remember you putting a spoonful of that stuff in your mouth.
You and I borrowed food anytime we could from some of the...
Well, Don would always sell the food because he was too professional. And he'd, take a handful of some pretty bad gorp, if we had gorp.
Yeah.
And people would be talking. He goes, I love this stuff. And he had this move to where he'd throw it up into his mouth, but he'd miss his head and throw the gorp over his shoulder into the river.
Oh, God.
But boy, did you ever sell the food. But people were so hungry they didn't eat anything. You could have thrown hay out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We learned that. If people get so hungry, just, don't feed them, and then you can feed them anything.
Yeah, and food always tastes better outdoors, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I've got a great next question, and I think it has to do, I'm not sure what boat you were in, but in, what was it, 68, there was a gigantic flood down a tributary called Crystal Creek.
Okay, that was in 66.
66, excuse me, that's right.
Okay, I'll tell you the story, because I know you're going to ask
the question. It's a thrilling story.
Yeah. Okay, here's the deal. I was running triple rigs with Ron Smith, GCE, and Ron and Sheila at that time, when they started the company, were they're trying to build the company. And so they he ran every trip with me at the start. He would run one boat, a 33 footer with side tubes, and I'd run a triple rig. And in 66, at the start of the season, he said, Royce Knight or somebody said they flew over and said there was a huge flood down there, and Crystal Creek is flooded, and there's a huge rapid. And we thought, no, sure, And they said, no, it's like lava. And then we're really skeptical, Well, we took off on the trip, and I didn't even see a picture of it. Neither did Ron, you know. So we get down there, and there was one boat. We ran early. We ran in May, I believe, and there was one boat ahead of us, a motor rig run by John Cross Jr.
Yep, I remember John.
That's right. And John Cross Jr. was the first one to run, and he ran in a motor rig, a 33-footer with pontoons, you know. And then the second guy to run it was Ron Smith in his rig. And I was the third guy to run it, but I was rowing in a triple rig. So my claim to fame is I was the first guy ever to row Crystal Creek, you know.
The first. Number one, Don.
Okay, let me ask you a question, and people out there that might have run Grand and are listening to this, where do you think I ran in Crystal? The standard procedure or answer would be, well, yeah, you ran far right and bumped down on the shore. No. We ran far left against the far left wall.
The elevator run.
And you know why we did? Because there were so damn many what we call crystal logs jammed up on that right side that you couldn't even go around the island down there.
Yeah, it was all jammed up over on the right side of the island.
Well, you and I used to see crystal rigs for 10 years after that happened, you know.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, just a quick segue as far as the crystal logs, you could recognize these logs were a part of that big event, that flood.
Yeah. All the way down the river.
Because they were huge green logs when they got torn out of the ground, the big trees, you know, cottonwood trees and willow trees, and just they had these high impacts around their root ball
until they got bashed off.
And so there was like this battering ram of snubbed root system on one end of these logs, and it was absolutely horrifying to see these things.
Well, it looked like they'd been through a lumber mill and crushed
and been
up.
Rotated.
There was no bark on any of them. The bark was gone.
They were just these beasts that were spread along.
And they had splinters sticking out all over the place. Remember that?
Yeah. And there, actually, one night we were with a rowdy charter. And somebody threw one of those. They had a big bonfire out on the old beaches. You know, they occasionally, with all that driftwood, have a bonfire. And some of them really pretty big bonfires. And we'll talk about—
Real big, yeah.
We'll talk about the big bonfires later. But Don marched out into this huge bonfire and dragged this big crystal log out of the bonfire. Not that Don's superstitious, but it was bad luck to burn crystal logs.
Burn a crystal log.
It was bad juju. Right, Don?
Yeah, we were.
I never burned one.
I always said I was not superstitious, but after I started running Grand, I got real superstitious.
You were pretty superstitious.
Yeah, there's no.
But you know what it was, Don? I don't think it was superstition. I think it was respect.
Respect.
You know, it truly was.
Respect for the river. Absolutely. Yeah. No question.
And the river loves you to be humble, and the river loves.
Oh, yeah. The river does not like cocky people.
No, the river kicks their ass.
Yeah.
Spanks them.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's go back to the top of the rapid. You are going in there. You're going to do the elevator run. And the crystal shoved this huge pile of rock out into the river where it had never been. I think it ran over 30,000 or something.
It was about 30,000.
And it pushed water out there and made this debris fan that was like none other. But what people need to realize also that it was 3 years past when they started building Glen Canyon or building the lake or pooling up the lake.
Yeah.
And so that stayed that way for a long, long time.
It did.
And it had a huge hydraulic jump right at the apex of the turn there. It shoved this delta of debris out into the river, and it was a ferocious, huge, steep,
It was horrible.
The old crystal hole, as it is now.
Oh, God, yeah.
But if you were right near the wall, and then there's the hole right above Slate Creek.
Yeah.
there was this weird little warble of water between the wall and the deepest, meanest part of the hole that would kind of just elevate you up high enough to where you'd wash by the hole.
Well, thing is, there was so much pressure coming off that wall that you could probably drive. And I've ran in motor rigs many times after that. And I think you could go full cob against that wall and not hit it. Because there was pressure coming off that wall like you can't believe.
Yeah, it was
a
ferocious pressure. I used that elevator kayaking it.
Yeah.
I think I might have broken my nose once or twice doing it. But, the elevator run. Not everybody remembers that. Or remember that famous picture of Walt Blackadar with a high kayak brace coming up through the pit?
We had no choice, and we... when we looked at that and that triple rig, you know, Ron Smith, he was nervous as hell too, you know, and he didn't want to run it, but he did. And he had a bigger boat than me, of course. But boy, I got the top of that. And finally I just said, you know, we're not going to camp here. So let's go. And so we did what you and I did 100 times down there was we got it lined up, three quartered it, jammed that oar underneath the frame, and held on for damn dear life.
You know? Yeah, you had this deal where you would lay down and brace your feet on the frame across the way with that oar folded in.
It was jammed up against the...
And if you let the water get under your body, it would just take you out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was underwater most of the time.
And that was your lava posturing.
Yeah, you've seen me do that 100 times.
Oh, yeah, no, you taught me everything I know, man. Everything I know.
That's scary, Brian.
Yeah, well, it's disappointing for a lot of people, I would imagine. But, and so you came out of it okay, and it was glory.
We did come out okay, but we were totally soaked with water, and I had everybody... down and dirty, you know, and hanging on with two arms. And to be honest with you, once we got to Slate Creek or that little creek across the way and got near there, I don't remember anything except being underwater, you know. And but I do know once we got past that and popped out the other side, I was thinking, thank God, you know. And then after that, the jewels were nothing, you know. It was piece of cake from there on, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the
even lava was good.
The glory.
Yeah.
So, and those triple rig trips, you had several boatmen, you say, behind you. Isn't there a story of one of them like abandoned ship or something?
Yeah. Okay. And now I know what he's talking about. Shall I name names?
You can. I think we want just transparency on this show.
I'll tell you a story about one of the first trips I ran with Ron. He wanted us to try out a hatch rig down there, you know. And in fact, McCallum used to run the hatch rig with the mousetrap over the back and the motor.
Yeah.
Well, Hatch used to row a 33-footer with a front oar and a back oar, you know, two oars each one, you know. And so I agreed to run a 33-footer with Ron through there. And
mousetrap stuff.
It wasn't a mousetrap. It was a rowing rig. It was a hatch row rig. Ron had a sort of mousetrap rig, but he had a transom, you know. Anyway, so I don't even met this guy. It's Rick Petrillo. And Rick was a great guy. He was a poet. He was a river guy. You know, he's a very likable guy. But he was scared to death, you know. So was I, but I hit it better. So we get down to House Rock. And, you know, House Rock's a pretty ornery little rapid, you know, in some stages. And we could maneuver that 33-footer with a pair of oars anyway, and Rick had never rowed before. So I said, I was the front oar, and I said, hey, just do what I do. If I pull a right oar, you pull a right oar. If I pull a left oar, then you pull a left oar. If I hold my hand up, that means don't do a damn thing, you know. We get down to House Rock, and we line up good, and we're going to miss it, but you have to come close to that hole, and it's a little scary. And we're going through the hole, and I said, Rick, pull. And I looked back, and he's gone. He jumped out of the boat at the hole. He jumped overboard, and I dug him out afterward. Ron helped me. Ron was ahead of me. Got him back on board, and I says, what the hell did you do? He said, I was scared. I thought we were going over. I said, no. We weren't close, you know. You stay with the boat.
Stay in the boat, especially if it's
okay. Now I'm not done yet. Then we get down to President Harding. Now, President Harding, is all you people out there that have run know that it's a one rock rapid. It's got a big obelisk rock in the middle, and you got to go either right or left, usually right, because that's where most of the water goes. We get down there and we screw up. And I screwed it up. And we slam in sideways into the rock. And before we hit the rock, Rick jumps over again. So that's twice he jumped over. Well, we didn't flip, obviously, but, you know, we bounced off and made it. So we get down to down by Furnace Flats at that time down there, and that was quite a waste from there. But anyway, down there, Ron says, you guys aren't going to make it. He says, you and Rick are screwing up right and left. You're not going to make it. And I said, well, you know, what the heck? I mean, yeah, we are, but we'll be okay. We're learning, you know. So he wants to fold the boat up, put it on his rig, and motor out. Well, I talked him into running the Rick didn't want to run anymore. He was scared. So he got on the motor rig, and then Sheila's brother ran with me as the back oar. And we didn't have any problem, except in lava. Ron almost turned over in lava. And we had to run down the left side, do the hatch run down the left. So that was my... where somebody bailed out and jumped in the water.
But not only once, but twice, and
twice,
then bailed.
Twice in the same.
And bailed. The third was the charm. He got out of the boat.
Oh, my God. Never get off of a perfectly good boat, you know.
Never.
Never.
That's fantastic.
Or an airplane, for that matter.
And so then, you know, you came on board with us. We had all those great trips and Grand Canyon. All the way. You were Grand Canyon. I was Grand Canyon. But there's another aspect I just want to touch on. So, well, we've got the time. You were a tremendous wrestler. And you know, it's a tremendous sport.
Are you really going to do this to me? You're going to make
me
brag.
I want to talk about you because I brag about you a little bit, and I'd like to substantiate this. Like I said, I want this to be a real...
All right.
Transparent interaction with you.
Okay.
But Don was a hell of a wrestler, and he was a hell of a wrestler coach. Can you just share with us, and I know you're a humble man, but share with us your wrestling career.
I'll do it real fast.
Yeah, no, I think all of us will appreciate that.
Okay, yeah. Well, I started wrestling in Lamar, Colorado, moved to Mexican Hat. When I went to Blanding, I was the only non-Mormon kid there, and I was kind of a loner a little bit at first, and they had a wrestling team. And I wrestled in junior high, and I was good at it. And believe it or not, I won the state title my sophomore, junior, and senior year. I didn't lose in high school. Then I went to college at Northern Colorado University. I won three Rocky Mountain Conference championships. I won the MIWA twice, and I placed twice, sixth place in the NCAA one tournament. Then I went on as a coach. And I won multiple state titles at a high school called Brighton High School in Salt Lake City. And that's the end of my bragging. Thanks, Brian.
Well, no, but that's pretty brag worthy.
Yeah, really.
I've got to tell a story about his wrestling, though. It reared its ugly head on a river trip I did with you. It was the Jim Cabaldi charter.
Yeah.
And most of you that are old like us remember Jim Cabaldi as a fantastic musician. For Traffic.
Traffic,
the legendary band Traffic. And he was down there with some of his record label people. There were models. It was kind of a hooty-tooty one-boat charter. And I was the swamper. I think it was my first motorboat trip. And you were the motorboatman. And we had these people on the trip. Well, we had this one fairly stuffy, big old guy that had put the thing together.
I know what you're going to say.
And booked. Yeah. Well, don't interrupt me. This is...
Okay, I'm sorry.
Remember, this is my show. But who's kind of messing with Neff? He's kind of a cocky guy. And evidently, he was a heavyweight, you know, he's a wrestler himself. And probably athletic when he was in better shape and stuff like that. But he finally messed with Don one too many times. And right in the middle of camp there, he kind of challenged Don. And it was no sooner that said than okay. And Don was had the guy, I think he had his sternum on the top of your head with your arms hooked around his knees and sent him to the ground. And to this day, I've never heard a body slap on the wet sand as hard as Donnie drilled this guy. And the guy was twice your size. Yeah. It really impressed me as a young boy as to your toughness and your quickness.
Oh, geez, you're laying it on good now, aren't
well,
you?
Well, you know.
I know, but I
people yeah. need to know, you know. You're yeah, such know. A humble
I,
guy. Well,
I was a wrestler, and wrestlers are people you don't want to mess with. And
no, you know, I never messed with you.
Yeah. Well, you,
you know, after seeing stuff like that.
Well, I wouldn't mess with you either, though.
Well, I'm only finding that out now.
Yeah.
But so let's spin off from those boats and let's really go high tech.
You want to hear about the oddest boat I ever ran?
That's where I was leading, I think. Tell us about the oddest boat.
Well, it's called a Water Trotter. And if you haven't heard about the Water Trotter, I guess you could look it up. I don't know where you're going to, I guess.
You'd be able to find it, but you're going to find it right here.
Right here. Yeah, Brian Durker, call Brian Durker up. I can't give you his phone number, but call him. He'll
but
tell
we're going to have a picture of it on the
oh, yeah, good.
On the okay. cover sheet. So you could go to our website and get a picture of it or two.
Okay, here's the story. In 1961, I was running for Mexican Hat, and we were going to run a San Juan trip, and this very eccentric fellow named Wayne, what was his last name? Forget his last name. Wayne from York, Pennsylvania. Wayne Wilson. Wayne Wilson from York, Pennsylvania. He brought this trailer that he hauled in with his, I don't know if he had a pickup truck even, but anyway, he had this ball, plexiglass ball he brought down there. And he had told a paper in Pennsylvania that he was going to walk through the Grand Canyon, be the first guy to walk through the Grand Canyon on the river with this plexiglass ball. And of course, I didn't know anything about it, you know. And so we get down there, and Gay says, well, we got to put it in the river and see how it goes, you know. So we put it in the river, and Gay was in his Jeb boat out there, and we were beside. You got pictures of that, I'm sure. And he gets in, you crawl through a hatch, and the thing is what, about, oh, 7 feet in diameter, 8 feet in diameter, something like that, 7.5 feet, I don't know.
Big, yeah.
Yeah, and you crawl through a hatch or by either side, and then you have handles that slide down, and then you stand up and hold on to two handles, one on each hip, and then you walk forward. And as you walk, the ball rotates, and there are fins on the outside of the ball that grip the water, and it'll actually propel you forward. And you can lean left or lean right to make a turn left or right. Unfortunately, it doesn't work very well in big rapids or any rapid. It works pretty well in calm water, though. So anyway, he was supposed to run with us down San Juan, and he did, in order to get Life magazine to film him going through Grand Canyon. Well, we ran down San Juan. Wayne was about 60 years old, and he wasn't in very good shape, and it was hot. You know how hot it gets down there.
Oh, yeah.
And the poor guy, we got down about, oh, I'd say 30, 40 miles, and he was exhausted, and so I had to in between rapids, I would take over and give him some rest, you know. And so once we got past the confluence of the San Juan and Glen Canyon, I ran it most of the way down, except when they took pictures. Whenever there's a picture opportunity.
You loaded him back in.
Wayne was back in it, yeah, when they took pictures, which is fine with me, you know. But
you're a pretty humble guy, though.
I'm very humble. I shock myself sometimes, you know. Where was I? Anyway, it's called a Water Trotter, and it's the most bizarre boat, if you want to call it that, or craft that I've ever seen run through San Juan.
It's pretty close to the most bizarre one I've heard about.
And it is in the August 1961 edition of Life magazine.
That guy had a skill for promotion. He didn't have a skill for the water trotter.
Oh, he was way over his head.
Yeah. And so whatever became of his down, what, didn't he want to do the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, let me tell you what happened at the end. We got down to Crossing the Fathers, and Gaylor, he's a pretty low-key guy, but Wayne was not happy by the time he got down to Crossing the Fathers. He didn't feel well. He was hot. He was in over his head. He had to have this 16-year-old snot-nosed kid run his boat for him, that he couldn't do except for pictures. And we were offloading our San Juan boats onto the trailer, and Wayne disappears. He's gone. And Wayne, and I didn't know this until I read Gaylor Savely's book, The Rapids and the Roar. He wrote a book, and it came out last year, I think.
And it's really good.
It's a good book.
Yeah, I'd recommend this book to anybody.
It's a great book. Great book.
Really cool stuff in there.
By the way, he mentions me in that book. Did you know that?
I read that.
Oh, good. Okay.
in a humble sort of way, though.
In a humble way, yeah. So anyway, Gay looks around. We're down at Crossing the Fathers. Gay looks around, and he says, "Where's Wayne?" Wayne's gone. Wayne and the bubble are gone. And we thought he was going to go back to Mexican Hat, and then we'd meet him down there because we were going to run Grand Canyon the next trip. And we were going to get photographed by Life magazine also, which we did. And Georgie White was down there, and she got photographed. In that same edition of August 1961 Life magazine, Georgie's in it, and I'm in it in a cat boat. And Wayne Wilson in that bubble boat. Not all together, but different pictures, different stories. And so we get down to Lee's Ferry, and at least this is the part Gay has to tell me because I wasn't around. But he said that Wayne Wilson, good self-promoter, shows up at Lee's Ferry, and Life magazine finally says, okay, you're not going to take it through Grand Canyon. Oh, no. But we'll say you've run Grand Canyon if you run from Lee's through Perea. And so he took the bubble, water trotter, and ran it through Perea, and then they pulled him over after that, and then he evaporated, and nobody's heard from him since. At least I haven't,
And the bubble?
In the bubble.
The bubble?
Yeah, he wasn't like the Wizard of Oz, and he just kind of bubbled off.
Don't you wish, though, that we had that bubble still? We'd store it in your garage.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
I wonder what happened to the bubble. I'm fascinated by this.
I've often wondered if I could call the York, Pennsylvania newspaper and see whatever happened to Wayne Wilson.
And I think it'd be neat if it does turn into like a where some money has to go back and forth. Maybe you could be my partner on this bubble.
I think we ought to go back.
At this stage of your life, Don.
We should go back there and either buy it or steal it and bring it back and run it down.
Yeah, run it down the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. I don't know.
What we'll do is we'll have a support team.
You run
team.
It down the Grand Canyon. I'll watch you.
We'll have a support team. No, I've got a nephew that will stuff in there. We're not going to do it, but we'll have support raft and documentary stuff. We'll bring Gavin. So
we'll
that
write
we
a book about it. We'll make a lot of money.
Interview people at the end of each day.
Oh, great, yeah.
and then, so Don, life takes us where it takes us. You've had all kinds of experiences, but another really neat thing in my relationship with you on the river had to do with your family. And your wife and the kids and stuff. And we had RJ on those early trips. And the great joy we got out of being family-like down on those river trips. But I've always really appreciated your love for family and the community. And, all the stuff that we still have going on by these conversations, right? It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been good, and you've been a part of our family, too.
And I'm lucky for that.
Yeah. Well, you know what Natalie thinks of you and my daughter Lisa and Ronnie and RJ, and you know, it's been a really, really good deal. We've had a great run, and we should be very thankful for everything that we did together on the river, on and off the river.
Well, and like I've always told everybody, is that you taught me everything I know, whether I needed to know it or didn't need to know it. But I love you, man. Thanks for being here.
Love you too. Thanks, Brian.
Big Adventures is produced by Brian Durker, Margaret Knight, and me, Gavin Buchner. Bill Gleckler and his mandolin provide our music. If you like our show, please subscribe on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.